we come to our final speaker, Nick Garbutt. I don't know if you've been watching the Football World Cup. I think a certain Luis Suarez has set the news agenda recently, but if you've been watching, as I have on television, you'll know that the best television pundits are those who have played the game at the highest level. And I think when we equate that to the media industry, there's no doubt that Nick is well qualified to be a commentator on the media. He's been at the cutting edge of journalism. He's been editor of the Irish News. He's been deputy editor of the Belfast Telegraph. Still writes a column. Also, he is the man responsible for setting up the Belfast Telegraph website back in 96. Yeah. So we have an interesting contribution from Nick Garbutt.
Well, thanks very much indeed. And Denzel was saying before that he got involved as a journalist and reporter to make a difference. If I'm being completely honest, I got involved in it to make mischief. I've actually sort of slightly changed what I was going to say today, because I got it all prepared, and then I was in Robinson Cleaver's just by the City Hall in Belfast on Tuesday lunchtime, having a cup of coffee with a friend and colleague who used to work on Fleet Street, so he's a journalist as well. And we were sort of having this conversation, and then Ryan just grabbed my hand and he said, "Look at that wanker. The very antithesis of journalism." And I looked up, and there walking through the door was Nicholas Witchell, the BBC's royal correspondent. He was there in order to cover the Queen's visit to the City Hall. Now, naturally, as I'm apologies for offending you, I was appalled by the language, alarmed by the syntax as a pedant, but also it just made me think about, you know, where that's coming from and what that means, what he meant. Because I think it sort of speaks quite a lot about how a lot of people just don't understand journalists and they don't understand other people. So I was sitting there watching, and here's a bit of reportage for you. Nicholas Witchell, in case you're interested, he was having a cheese and ham panini. There was a hand-cut cheese and onion crisps and a bottle of cloudy lemonade. Now I was reflecting on this, and I thought it would actually be really quite interesting to actually just talk a little bit in terms of changing the conversation, if you like, about some of the roots of journalism and taking a little bit into the past and my take on what it is, which is not at all what a lot of people think it is, really. So we start, and this is great for people from Northern Ireland because you relate to this. I think for me, the first journalist was somebody who believed that the world was 3,000 years old and had serious issues about people entertaining themselves on a Sunday. His name was William Prynne, and he was a Puritan dissident, if you like, in the early part of the 17th century. Now, Prynne wrote an article which was attacking the theatre. And he basically said that people who were involved in theatrical pursuits, i.e. our panel last night and all the rest of it, were destined to go to hell. And even more offensively, he said that the actresses who took part in theatrical productions were whores. This didn't go down very well with King Charles, because his wife, Queen Henrietta Maria, was actually a very talented amateur actress who quite often did performances at the palace. So Prynne was arrested. He was tried in front of the Star Chamber, and he was sentenced to have his ears docked, which means slicing, you know, the top of them down with a knife, and his nose slit, and then he was stuck into the Tower of London. When the English Civil War broke out and Parliament decided that it was going to assert sovereignty, the first thing that they did in the Long Parliament was actually to go to the Tower and release William Prynne. And Prynne started then a whole series of scandal sheets, broadsheet attacks on the royalist forces and the king and Prince Rupert, who was his most ferocious general. So if you like, what then happened was that the royalists countered with all their kind of stuff. And so newspapers were born in this part of the world. And interestingly, what were they for? They were for propaganda, and they weren't edited by people who were in any way trying to seek truth. They were edited by the modern-day equivalent of Lance in his former career and Alistair Campbell. It was a means of actually trying to influence people's thinking. In the century that followed, you had governments rapidly caught onto that the importance of controlling the media. So what they did was that they introduced taxes which were so punitive that it was quite impossible for newspapers to survive without actual government subvention, without bribes from the government, essentially, which is quite interesting, really, considering that the newsletter was founded in 1727. I think it's the oldest surviving English daily newspaper. They must have had bucket loads of money from the government back in the past to keep the party line. So there was this kind of this sense right from the start that newspapers and newspaper industry were actually almost part of the apparatus of power, or, you know, indeed levers of dissent. You'll find that in Northern Ireland, well, what is now Northern Ireland, there was actually a journalist who was executed in 1789. He was a satirist called James Porter, who was hanged after writing all these stories in the Northern Star that were actually satirising Lord Londonderry, whose family still lives in the house that he used to lampoon. You move on through the 19th century, you get the rise in literacy, it becomes more and more important, and by the time you get to the area in which Lance would know an awful lot more about me, because he's actually written about this, by the end of the 19th century, when you get these great press barons who are buying newspapers for their influence. Was it 15 MPs that it was supposed to be worth owning a newspaper? That was the political press. That's what they used to call it, and it lasted till what? Maybe the middle of the 20th century. And then you had this guy called Arthur Christianson who came along. Christianson was a founder of popular journalism, and what he did was that he decided that he wrote this book, which is a bit bonkers, but it's very interesting, called Headlines All My Life, where he actually describes going to an association football match in 1949 to watch Arsenal play Derby County at Derby County's ground. And he's walking off the train, and he talks about walking through these row upon row of identical terraced houses, all with people in them, all leading identical lives, which is what he was saying. And he said that as editor of the Daily Express, his overwhelming desire was to actually give these people in these identical, depressing houses something to aspire to, something to actually charge their lives and to fire them up. And that's what the Daily Express's sort of mantra was. And he used to have this big plaque in the newsroom at the Daily Express, which just read, "Remember the back streets of Derby," which must have been very confusing to some of the reporters who'd never been there. But the point was, at that time, society would have been homogenous, and it was quite possible, I think, to actually to produce a newspaper that did actually have mass appeal. You know, you're talking about the period immediately after the war, when there actually wasn't really that much to do, and people did have very similar, there wasn't that much variety. So now we come on to and I'm sorry I'm speaking too quick, because I wanted to get that sort of thing in about where the press comes from. Because this kind of stuff about, you know, newspapers of record, that somehow the press has this sort of function which is about actually telling you everything that's important that's been going on today, it's been confined to a very few titles. The Times used to do it before Murdoch took over. You have the Irish Times that did an excellent job of that until relatively recently. And you had the... not the Scotsman, what's the other big paper in Scotland? The Scotsman certainly aspired to do that for a while. But generally speaking, the press wasn't like that. And as you moved further from Christianson's days and things started to decline and you didn't look to the newspapers for news any longer, what did they do? They created this this parallel universe by writing about what's on the telly, didn't they? You know, so, you know, you'd look in the old days about somebody from Coronation Street being convicted of some kind of crime or what have you, and you were really confused because you weren't quite sure who the actor was and who the person was. And quite often you'd have even court cases where they'd actually have the start, you know, the name of the character rather than the person who was actually in trouble. So you've I think with tabloid newspapers long since actually stopped pretending to actually cover news in the way that most of us would understand it. They've long since moved into actually creating this sort of celebrity culture and then demolishing it through phone hacking and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know how long I've got, Denzel, because another couple of minutes. Yeah. So I think really for me that's what that's the harsh and stark and maybe quite unsavoury reality about what journalism is. And I think as well that it's something that we can maybe talk about a little bit more, I'm sure we'll all have views on. It's now in deep crisis. Deep crisis. Newspaper circulations peaked in 1962, and they've been on the slide ever since. I left the Belfast Telegraph in 1999, and its circulation was 124,000. I don't know how many copies it actually sells today. It's about 42, 43,000, something like that. That's in it. That's not a slide. That's a paper being annihilated. It's annihilation. And the reason is, of course, that they've been completely taken over by technology. And that what we're seeing now is this kind of shift between print and online, which is irrevocable and irreversible. The problem, of course, is that they can't make money online. You can't get the advertising. You can't actually get you can't charge a cover price. And so then you've got sort of people like Stephen, who are actually pioneers of doing exciting, really genuinely exciting investigations and publishing them online. The trouble with that is that it has to be a funded model. You have to have a philanthropist to pay for it, which has actually got interesting implications. I'm not casting any aspersions here, but potentially interesting implications about independence, hasn't it? So when I think about this, I feel a deep sense of an industry in turmoil. An industry which is going to have to change the conversation, because with the internet and with social media, increasingly, it's not about telling people things any longer. It's no, there you are, there's the news, you read it in that paper. It is actually about a conversation, isn't it? Because you have forums, you have the opportunity to tweet, and there is now the chance to actually speak back and to make your voices heard. And also, if you don't like what a newspaper's doing, the cost of entry is so low now, you can start your own online publication yourself. How much does it cost? You know, the cost of a site and a nice WordPress template, which will cost you nothing. So there's a kind of a sense that things are about to change, and that can only, for me, to be a good thing in the long term, because it means that we are actually having a conversation now instead of being lectured at by vested interests who don't have the past that we think they have, that have always been propagandists and have never been about truth-telling or giving a detailed report of what happened that day in a particular place. I accept the distinguished exception, of course, is the weekly newspapers, of which Dunsell was... seriously, it's important to say this, because they are and always have fulfilled a mission which is around community and community engagement. And that's why papers like both the papers in Fermanagh are so strong still today.
Okay.